We are here exercising our rights of freedom of speech and support the Hong Kong protesters.
Pro-democracy protests are heard well away from Hong Kong. It's Wednesday, August 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Kashmir's largest city is very quiet. Top leaders prepare for the G7 summit, signs of a business slowdown, cycling for the blind, and tech goes to Main Street. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Huge street demonstrations have been ongoing for more than 11 weeks in Hong Kong, starting with a backlash against an extradition bill that opened the potential for Hong Kong residents to be tried in court under mainland China's different legal system. Those protests have expanded into general displeasure for what is seen as Beijing's erosion of democratic rights, guaranteed until 2047 under the 50-year handover agreement with Britain. The protests are not limited to Hong Kong. Hundreds of pro-democracy protesters rallied in Sydney despite warnings from Beijing for foreign governments and activists not to get involved in the issue. Sydney is from where Phil Mercer reports.
There have been rallies in Australia's biggest cities in support of and in opposition to pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. Scuffles broke out between rival groups in Melbourne Friday, while hundreds of pro-Hong Kong supporters gathered in the centre of Sydney Sunday. Many wore face masks, wary of alleged Chinese state surveillance of citizens who publicly support campaigners in Hong Kong. Protesters in Sydney said they were taking a stand against authoritarianism.
We don't want to see our home get into a state where we have to follow the rules that are often not very fair.
Australian is actually supporting us, supporting Hong Kongers, so we don't have to be afraid of any threats from anywhere. So we are all united.
We are here exercising our rights of freedom of speech and support the Hong Kong protesters.
Pro-China groups have also held marches in Australia, with chants of "Long live China" and "If you don't love China, you are our enemy." Australia is home to tens of thousands of Chinese students, as well as other migrants from mainland China. The Chinese ambassador to Australia, Chen Yingye, said protesters in Hong Kong had exhibited radical, violent and illegal behaviours. Activists and police have clashed in Hong Kong over the past 10 weeks, and protests were sparked by an extradition bill, which has since been suspended by the Hong Kong government. China has built up security forces in nearby Shenzhen and has compared the protests to terrorism. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has urged authorities in Hong Kong to listen carefully to what people are saying and work towards a peaceful and calm resolution of what is a very, very serious issue. In Canberra, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade has urged Australian travellers to exercise a high degree of caution in Hong Kong. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit our website at voanews.com. Pompeo, unlike Trump, concerned about North Korea missile tests. Rohingya Muslims say they don't want to return to Myanmar. Taiwan Sai expresses thanks over approval of F-16 V sale. In South Korea, a small but notable backlash against Trump. Hong Kong's evolving protests, voices from the front lines. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The streets of Srinagar were largely deserted Monday, and most schools and shops were closed, even though authorities say they were reopening close to 200 elementary schools in Kashmir's largest city. Residents are angered over the Indian government's decision to downgrade the status of the Indian-administered side, Jammu and Kashmir, from a federal state and split into two union territories ruled by Delhi. Frequent protests have led to the government's clampdown in the area, and residents fear for their safety. VOA's Latika Hoke saw video by VOA's Urdu service, which shows Srinagar as a ghost city.
Few people were in the streets of Srinagar on Monday, apart from security patrols. Shops were closed and merchants sat idly outside with not much to do.
The internet is down and the phone lines are down. The traffic has stopped. We cannot move around. Hospitals are closed and sick children cannot get help. We are stuck.
Parents kept their kids at home despite the government's announcement that some schools are open.
Beginning, in fact, from last Saturday.
Beginning last Saturday, we have made preparations to reopen schools for young kids. In Srinagar district, we will reopen about 190 elementary schools first and then gradually open the others.
Burn Hall Catholic School in Srinagar and other private schools remained closed amid safety concerns.
We will not reopen until the lines of communication between parents, teachers, and school management are reestablished. Not a single kid would come to school until the communication is normalized.
Jammu and Kashmir is the only region in India with the majority Muslim population. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has decided to strip the state of its constitutional special status, saying it was needed to facilitate economic development and improve security. But many Kashmiris see the unilateral move as a betrayal.
We need freedom. 70 years ago, we were promised, and we have waited for the promise to be fulfilled. If they don't want to honor the promise, then just kill us. We are ready for that.
Tens of thousands of people have already been killed during a 30-year-old insurgency for independence from India. After revoking the state's autonomy earlier this month, the government in Delhi has detained Kashmiri leaders and imposed communications blackouts, curfews, and other measures to prevent another armed conflict. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam says she hopes Sunday's peaceful march through the streets of the Chinese territory marks a turning point in the nearly two-month anti-government protests. Lam says Hong Kong's police force will launch an internal probe into 174 complaints of excessive force. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We hope you're having a very nice day. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. The leaders of the United States, France, Britain, Germany, Italy, Japan, and Canada come together to discuss major global challenges in France on Saturday at the annual meeting of the G7 Group of Industrialized Nations. As host, French President Emmanuel Macron has made fighting inequality the theme of the summit and has invited several other world leaders to attend. But Henry Ridgewell reports any grand ambitions for the summit will likely be stymied by more pressing concerns.
Economic storm clouds threaten to engulf the meeting in the French resort of Biarritz. In recent days, indicators from both sides of the Atlantic show worrying signs. Government bond yields in the United States and Germany were briefly higher for two-year than 10-year bonds, a sign that investors see significant risks ahead, says economist Jasper Lawler of London Capital Group.
Particularly in the US, has actually been a very reliable signal to point towards a recession.
What's more, the usual fiscal tools to tackle a recession might not be available.
We don't have that usual fallback from central banks of cutting interest rates because they already have and they're already at rock bottom levels.
The economic fears are rooted in the trade war between the US and China, which has resulted in both countries imposing import tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of each other's goods. Europe is suffering additional headwinds.
The trade war, but also just the auto sector, the transition from using diesel cars to electronic vehicles. It's a period of uncertainty that's unduly affecting Europe.
Summit host France is determined not to let economics overshadow its own agenda. And top of the list is climate change, says analyst John Curtin of the G7 Research Group at the University of Toronto.
Driven by the scary science, which is unfolding every day, But more importantly, by the historically high heat waves that have afflicted Europe, including France.
U.S. President Donald Trump left last year's G7 summit in Canada early and later disavowed the final communique. This year, France is determined to keep the United States on board, says Curtin.
President Macron, I think, has structured his agenda to allow Donald Trump to be at his best. Gender equality, the president's been very good on that, is at the top of the French list. Education, health.
Security concerns will also top the agenda, with North Korea resuming its ballistic missile tests and Iran seizing oil tankers in the Persian Gulf. This year, the anti-government protests in Russia and Hong Kong also pose questions for the G7.
Have we seen the tide where authoritarian leaders in various degrees are no longer in control? It may not be the wave of the future. In fact, if that's the case, then how can the G7 activate its distinctive foundational mission to promote democracy?
Meanwhile, new British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will meet Trump for the first time. Both leaders are hoping for a rapid trade deal amid signs of a steep economic downturn in Britain as it edges closer to crashing out of the European Union with no deal. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News.
Security is a perennial topic at G7 gatherings, and as this one convenes, the U.S. military has just tested a ground-based cruise missile with a range that would have been banned a mere 3 weeks ago. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has details.
The Pentagon says the missile was launched from an island off California's coast and hit its target after more than 500 kilometers of flight. That distance is important. The United States previously could not pursue ground-based missiles with a range between 500 and 5,500 kilometers. They were locked in the INF, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, a decades-old arms control pact with Russia. VOA previously reported that Washington withdrew from that pact on August 2nd, citing years of Russian violations. The Pentagon stressed that this cruise missile was not configured to carry a nuclear weapon, but rather a conventional payload, the type of conventional ground-based missile that new Secretary of Defense Mark Esper recently said he'd like to put in Asia.
We would like to deploy a capability sooner rather than later because of the importance of the great distances we need to cover and how important an intermediate range conventional weapon would be to the Asia Indo-PACOM theater.
Esper declined to tell us when or where the missiles could be deployed within the region during his trip there this month. Analysts primarily have focused on what the INF treaty withdrawal means for signatory nations Russia and the United States. But they say the end of the INF could be allowing the United States to strengthen its position against China. According to Esper, more than 80% of China's missile inventory has a range of 500 to 5,500 kilometers. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Coming up, an Asian economic slowdown. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news from VOA Asia. Britain's Foreign Office says it is extremely concerned by reports that an employee at its Hong Kong consulate has been detained in mainland China. Hong Kong's local news website says the employee failed to return from a business meeting in the neighboring southern city of Shenzhen on August 9th. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, tourism, retail, and automobile sales are slowing in some areas, as we hear in today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Weeks of protests and unrest have impacted Hong Kong's tourism and retail sectors. The total value in retail sales decreased by 6.7% in June 2019 compared with the same month in 2018. And according to the Hong Kong Tourism Board, visitor arrivals in June were down about 770,000 compared to the month before. Michael Hewson, chief market analyst of CMC Markets, says that if the unrest continues, it's likely to impact third quarter figures for Hong Kong. Michael Hewson.
If you take last year, for example, they collected record tax revenues of around about 342 billion Hong Kong dollars. I think it's highly unlikely, given the retail sales data that we've seen thus far this year, where every single month has been negative, that they will be able to repeat that.
Operations at Hong Kong International Airport have returned to normal after days of protests last week effectively shut down the airport and caused many flight cancellations. The events at the airport followed 10 weeks of protests throughout Hong Kong, which are still continuing to this day. Some analysts warn that if the unrest continues, large companies that have regional hubs in Hong Kong might consider other locations. Automobile industry analysts in India say the auto sector is hitting a slump. According to figures released by the Society of Indian Automobile Manufacturers, sales of passenger vehicles plunged by 31% in July, the ninth straight month of declines. Atul Singhal Wasan is the chief executive officer of Wasan Toyota Showroom.
Yes, there is a slowdown in sales, but also more important is the liquidity which is not available, or the ease of availability of funds.
Lending constraints aren't the only cause for the slump. New emissions and safety regulations have caused prices to rise, and a widespread economic slowdown has made consumers reluctant to spend. The crisis presents a major challenge for Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government. The auto industry employs 35 million people and accounts for nearly half of India's manufacturing output. Some say a tax cut will get the markets moving again. Mitul Shah is a senior research analyst from the automobile sector.
See, right now, overall situation of the industry is very pathetic in terms of the decline is in the range of like a 20-30%, which was never happened in past 15-20 years. So in this situation, any GST cut for a probably temporary period would provide a near-term relief to the industry, and it may improve the sentiment of the consumer to some extent.
India has long been a strong market for car makers. Big brands like Hyundai and Kia have invested billions to expand their footprint in the country. The latest slowdown in auto sales is just one of several economic indicators that suggest weakness in the overall economy. Government officials say that an added stimulus package is forthcoming. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news break from VOA Asia, Bangladesh says it will work with the United Nations Refugee Agency to determine if more than 3,000 Rohingya refugees will accept Myanmar's offer to return home nearly a year after a major repatriation plan failed. More than 730,000 Rohingya fled Rakhine after a military-led crackdown in August 2017. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, for many, blindness or poor vision can keep them from activities like cycling. But a New York City nonprofit called In Tandem works to make cycling accessible to everyone. The organization unites sighted New Yorkers with the visually impaired so that everyone can enjoy the ride. Anna Nelson has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
2, 1, up!
Artie Elephant always loved biking. As he got older, he lost his sight, but not his love for cycling. So he figured out a way to stay on the road by riding in tandem with sighted friends. He passed away in 2013, but those friends turned his idea into a non-profit, starting with 20 tandem bikes.
Then I tell her which pedal I prefer to be up. So I would like the left pedal up.
Today, In Tandem volunteers ferry blind, low vision, and other disabled riders around New York. But before they do, each volunteer is asked to close their eyes for a split second as they bike to feel what it's like. Then, after a short course in tandem biking, they are ready to meet their passengers.
Maria, and then we'll have Bill.
The volunteers are a varied group. There are lawyers, doctors, and IT specialists who give up their time to ride with someone who has forgotten what it feels like to pedal.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah.
You're not wearing a pretty dress this time.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody noticed.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're about to step down.
As the bikes fan out across New York City, service dogs wait patiently for their owners.
I was nervous the first couple of times that I did in tandem because you're in someone else's hands. You're totally dependent on them to steer the bike and coordinate with you.
I'm Ben.
Hi, I'm Susan.
Nice to meet
you. Nice to meet you.
So,
all right,
do you want to check out your seat? Yeah.
I think the seat's probably the right height.
Okay, great.
So I'm ready to roll when you are.
Okay, let's 3, 2, 1.
They have nothing in common except for the 30 minutes they will spend biking in tandem. But Ben will do his best to let Susan feel the sensation she has long since forgotten.
Over to the left, there's, I think, a baseball game going on. Maybe it's softball, actually. It looks like softball. Normally, when I ride around the park, I would never describe what I'm looking at, although there's, you know, a tree over there or a dog running around. But they seem to really enjoy it. And
absolutely. It's joyous. I always find myself smiling for no reason as I'm biking.
Since its creation in 2013, In Tandem Cycling has brought together more than 600 volunteers and 400 visually impaired passengers. Volunteers will spend the winter months raising money for new equipment to make sure they're right back here next summer. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Every day, cutting-edge research is being performed in government and university labs across the country. Tech transfer is the process of taking that research out of the lab and transforming it into a business. Tina Trin explains when company jumpstarts the process by introducing entrepreneurs to that research.
What's unique about these glass foams is that it's made entirely of glass hollow spheres. There is no epoxy or resin, no glue.
When it comes to glass foam, Matthew DeMay knows his stuff. He even co-founded a company that produces the material, which wouldn't be all that surprising until you realize he has no formal training in it. But Navy physicist Aaron Weiss does.
My work with amorphous materials suggested that if you heated the hollow glass spheres, you could get them to bond without any of the filler material.
Weiss originally developed the foam for the Navy. DeMay and his colleagues licensed and started a company with it. Their matchmaker? FedTech, a startup accelerator that pairs aspiring entrepreneurs with government researchers.
When research is done, it creates intellectual property that in theory can be the foundation of amazing new products.
FedTech helps bring those products to market through a process known as tech transfer.
If you think about Department of Defense, NASA, Department of Energy, the national labs, they're not really in the business of trying to make as much money as possible. Tech transfer is this process of taking tech out of the lab and moving it into a practical application.
Turns out, glass foam isn't just useful in water, but also on land, in safety helmets and body armor. FedTech helped DeMay and team connect the dots.
Understanding how to approach different sets of customers and then finding the problem spaces that our technology could fit into.
As for the physicist who admits he doesn't have a head for business,
to see that product go into the world, hopefully help other people and come back and help the Navy as well, is a really gratifying process.
When it comes to startup ideas, Solomon says young entrepreneurs often go with what they know, creating apps for their everyday life.
I love, you know, consumer-facing products, but man, if we can get, you know, people reaching outside of their comfort zone, starting companies around breakthrough technologies that may, you know, be able to really change people's lives for the better, that's a great thing.
The next unicorn startup might just be in a government lab. Tina Trin, VOA News, Arlington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Many of you have heard us on the radio. If you happen to be in the Philippines, perhaps you heard us on Falcon Radio at Adamson University. We say hello to everyone there who's tuned into our program today. We'd also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Cedric Franklin, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Keith Lane. Our program online has been brought to you by Michelle Liu. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.